Today's episode is brought to you by WorldwideGolfShops.com. Look, I don't know if you guys have heard, but 2020 has been one of the weirdest years ever, but also one of the best golf years ever for the industry. And WorldwideGolfShops.com has all of the great gear from all of the top brands, including training aids, apparel, and accessories, everything that you need to get you on the course and playing a little bit better. So go out to WorldwideGolfShops.com today.
You're listening to the Golf Unfiltered Podcast, your source for in-depth interviews with the biggest names, brands, and personalities in golf. Our mission? To keep you informed and help you enjoy the game even more. And now, the owner and host of the Golf Unfiltered Podcast, Adam Fonseca.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the show. This is your host, as always, Adam from GolfUnfiltered.com. You can follow me all over social media at GolfUnfiltered. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the fun places that kids like to go. You can also send me an email, adam@golfunfiltered.com. And of course, you know that we are brought to you by our friends over at Cleveland, Sprixon, and Zegzio. Folks, we are going to have more information out about this soon, but today, at the time of this recording release, Sprixon has just announced and they are launching their new ZX5 and ZX7 drivers. I've had the chance to play with them for a couple months now, and boy, I gotta tell you, I am so happy that we can talk about those, we can talk about the woods, we can talk about their hybrids and the entire iron line. Everything's out now, folks. And so I just implore you to go out and take a look at those because they are absolutely fantastic over at Sprixon Golf. Speaking of equipment, today we bring on a friend of the show, Mr. Bill Bush. He is of DrivingRangeHeroes.com. He has been on the show once or twice before. I forget how many times, but Bill and I have really gotten to know each other pretty well over the last few months. He and our mutual friend, Chris McEwen, have been collaborating quite a bit recently because we all live in the area. And so we've had the chance to play some golf together. We've had the chance to really pick each other's brains about a number of different things. And today, Bill comes on to talk a little bit more just about some of the gear talk that we like to have, you know. And Bill's one of those guys that, you know, he loves the game. He loves equipment, as you will, I hope, surely see in the interview today. But he also has a pretty good business mind about the game, and he's definitely got a lot of experience in dealing with golf equipment, taking it apart, literally. We touch on that a little bit on one of his most recent forays into old golf equipment. One of his hobbies that he has. And, you know, it's good to kind of share the common bond about not only what we do, because he owns and operates his own website. He reviews gear over there. He co-hosts the podcast with our friend Chris McEwen, That Range Life. You want to look that up as well. We talk about it in the episode here. But we also understand that we just kind of do this for fun. You know, I think just from a personal side of things, you know, highs and lows go with doing this type of thing. And I know some of you are listening to this and thinking, oh, come on, you're talking in front of a microphone sometimes and you update a few pictures on a website about golf. What could be so bad about that? Well, I think a lot of it is a matter of understanding that there is this subculture in the golf media space, and we just know a very small sliver of it. I've had the opportunity to get a deeper look into different aspects of this subculture, and I gotta tell you, not all of it's great. Don't get me wrong, I love the game. I love the people in the game. I've met a number of great people who I consider friends, very close friends. But as with anything in life, there's good and bad parts to this thing that we do in front of a microphone sometimes. And so Bill understands all of that. He and I talk a lot about just a number of different topics. And in today's interview, we talk specifically about some of our favorite equipment from 2020. Let's not forget that this was an incredible year for the industry. A lot of new golfers went onto the golf course for the first time. A lot of new golfers bought equipment for the first time. And Bill and I review a lot of equipment. We have the chance to get our hands dirty with a lot of it. And so I hope you enjoy kind of this breaking down the fourth wall a little bit, conversation with my friend Bill Bush. All right, folks, welcome back to the show. As I mentioned at the beginning in the intro, welcoming Mr. Bill Bush, friend of the show, onto the podcast today. If you're watching us on YouTube, be sure to go ahead and subscribe to what we got here. We're going to be putting these up as much as we can. Bill, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So the one of the minds behind DrivingRangeHeroes.com is probably where people will find you most recently. You've been a part of a number of different projects. How are things going over at DRH?
Pretty good. It's been a weird, as I'm sure many people watching, listening, and can relate, as well as yourself. It's been a weird year in golf and dealing with golf companies, because it's been a weird year for them. But all in all, it's been a pretty good, fun year. Seen some new good stuff throughout the year. I've done a lot of things, specifically with you and our buddy Chris McEwen. ChrisMcEwen.com, KMDC as we call him, to try to keep things interesting and just keep generating content, because of, frankly, most of the year, as big as golf was this year, which I think we talked about last time I was on your podcast, and I was pretty sure golf would find a way to ruin it, and I think we're on our way there. But as big as the golf year has been, it's still been very slow from our, I'd say, on our end of it, and cautious might be the right word for it. And to deal with that, did some really long podcasts. We've done videos, try to find different ways to look at the golf world a little bit. So I think people have enjoyed it. It's been fun. It's been something different. And then we'll see what happens next year. Maybe it'll help us get out of that usual insert golf equipment review here. And hey, did you see what happened in the PGA Tour last week? Everybody else is blogging it, so am I. And maybe it'll help us break out of that mold a little bit. Looking forward to it.
So this is your return to the podcast. And I love that little cross promotion you did for our friend Chris there. That was very nice of you. I'm sure he would appreciate that. And if you haven't told by now, folks, Bill and I, we've become pretty good friends over the last few months. We've been quarantined in our respective areas. We did have the chance to play golf recently over at a course nearby here. And, I think it would be safe to say that your take on the golf industry in general is pretty much, would it be safe to say it's a hobbyist, but certainly more in tune than that? How would you describe your connection with the golf industry?
So I would start at a higher level. Like, I love gear there. And I think I might have referenced this the other time too. There's a show, I think it used to be on IFC, like After Portlandia or something. And I forgot the guy's name, but something like Loves Gear or Does Gear. And he would just go around and explore the gear associated with stuff. Right. So I guess as a kid, man, I'll play catcher in baseball. You get all that cool gear, hockey, all the gear. Right. So I was big hockey player most of my life, and I'm really into golf gear, and that's clubs, the science of it or lack thereof, depending on what you're looking at. And that's a lot of fun to me, but my general life disposition is pretty counter to golf culture, in that I don't care for the exclusivity. I don't care for the elitist part of it, which we often run into, but at the same time, as you well know, I don't really enjoy the golf bro culture. I like it for the simplicity of you're outside for a handful of hours, just enjoying, hey, there's a duck in the lake. Oh, a bird just flew overhead. There's a deer running across the fairway. That's nice. And breathing some fresh air with some buddies, enjoying yourself, getting a break, and that's great. Mix that with the gear thing I'm in. I don't get into the, I mean, you know how it is. Everybody's always racing to have the coolest thing. I don't have a problem with you having the cool thing. It's like making sure everybody knows you have the cool thing and they don't. I don't love that. I tend to gravitate towards the people who just enjoy the game, enjoy being a little bit of a nerd about it, and take that for what it is, not the lifestyle, the traditional lifestyle, put it that way.
That makes sense to me. And I think I relate to that, which is probably why you and I get along so well. And as well as Chris, I mean, the two of you actually do a podcast, which is YouTube simulcast, you would, so to speak, is That Range Life, a show sometimes about golf.
Right.
And Chris talked a little bit about it when he was on here a couple episodes ago. But what was the thought process behind that show? I know his answer, but what's your take on it?
I'd be interested. As you know, I did not listen to that episode. I won't do it. Right. I have a story about that. Maybe another time. Right. I think that show is largely based on at the end of the day, we have the common bond that is golf. I'm holding a notebook in my hands, like, hey, should I do this now?
That's all your notes of golf wisdom.
Check. Yeah, but I do now. I did implement this for our YouTube show, the David Letterman cards.
Ooh, look at you.
Just for the sake of doing it, no other reason. Anyway, to answer your question, we at the end of the day, like, we obviously are huge golf dorks. We run internet websites related to golf content where we publish things regularly. So we do care. We do like to talk about it. It is one of our favorite hobbies, but none of us like to take it too serious. And I don't like reading, listening, watching a lot of the content we even produce. When I say we, the royal we,
right?
Because it is too serious. And, you know, people want that. They want to learn. They want to be educated about it. And that's fine. But I enjoy the stuff where it's like a nice casual conversation. Maybe it's about golf. Maybe you learn something. And maybe it's not. Maybe, especially during quarantine when everything was locked down, we were talking about the TV shows we were watching. And ultimately, it came down to, like, if you took two golf dorks, put them at a bar together, what conversations would they have? And that's what we wanted our YouTube show to be. Now, gets a little long in the tooth, especially once golf picked up, because, well, there's a lot of golf to talk about, and we started talking about too much golf. That said, I think that's what we've been trying to capture, is just two normal people having a normal conversation, not trying to be like, look at me, I'm such a golf bro, not trying to be a preachy, super technical golf expert with you. But if you sat down with a friend who happened to know a lot about golf and golf equipment, what would they say to you? And that's why we say that Range of Life, a show sometimes about golf, because sometimes it is. Sometimes it might not be. It might be about the turkey I smoked for Thanksgiving for 25 minutes.
Nice. Yeah, I saw that. If you follow Bill on Instagram, or if you're a friend of his and you're so fortunate to get turkey updates texts, which I was, I was enthralled by the progress of that bird.
It was unreal. It was unreal. Such a good, one of the best things I think I've ever done in the smoker, just saying.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. So you had mentioned that we do also share that common bond in loving golf gear. And, mm-hmm. you know, we wanted to talk a little bit today about some of our favorites from the past year. And there were a ton, especially during a year where there was just a huge golf boom in the industry. I mean, have you ever seen anything like this? I think the easy answer would be no, but because no one's seen anything like this from a sales perspective, from a golfer perspective, you know, people playing the game. But what has been your take overall of the year in gear, so to speak?
It's funny that you open that way, because you just gave me the perfect opportunity to make a point that I wasn't sure I was going to work in. And it's funny because all we heard once we were, you know, quote unquote, allowed to play golf during coronavirus was how big of a year this has been. It has been for golf and seeing things unlike we've ever seen, rounds played. Okay. You know, that was mm-hmm. the thing. And then people were still moving equipment. There is still the retail level is doing fine. But then, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Wait, you know better than I do, month, maybe 2 months, where they made the big statement of like, they've just completely blown out every record of mm-hmm. equipment sales, retail sales for golf. But then in the last month came out that statistic about it wasn't the regular golfers buying new gear, getting the latest and greatest. It was largely goods being sold to the guys and gals, getting mm-hmm. back into the game. People coming to the game for the first time, things like that. So, you know, did that equal, 10 zillion Callaway Mavericks were sold? Not really. The boom was a lot to the value sets, the box sets, or last year's model. You know, people just like, there's a lot more gear being bought, but it wasn't necessarily like the annual turnover and the newest stuff, the greatest stuff. I mean, obviously, I'm sure that stuff did sell a little more, but it wasn't the regular every year spender mm-hmm. that was blowing up that record. It was the new players with new gear to get back going. And that segues into caught my eye were the value brands. And by value brands, it doesn't mean they're bad gear. It means
right.
they aren't putting out a $600 driver. Their driver might be $300, $350, $200, $230. so companies like Tour Edge probably being a leader in that, and people are, if you follow me at all, you're sick of me talking about Tour Edge, but I mean, they've absolutely had a killer, year, and the gear stand, you know, the gear and the sales all stand behind and support that.
Yep.
But sub 70 guys out in Sycamore, Illinois, they do a straight to consumer model, and it's all way more affordable gear, but it's really good too. And they've had big years, and I think it's been a great opportunity for companies like them to thrive. Because let's be honest, it's also been a very questionable year with unemployment going up and down, and sales numbers for other businesses being down, which drive paychecks for golfers, and they can't go spend $600 on a driver, but maybe they'll spend $230. So
yeah,
that's been a big thing I've really noticed, and it'll be interesting to see going forward. God, you know, God hoping that the world stabilizes a little and returns back to normal. Will those guys continue to, now that they've caught eyes in this weird year, will they continue to blossom the way they are? I hope so. There's a lot of good stuff in that area. And I think you think of how expensive golf is now, and that's another big criticism of golf, how expensive it is. Maybe this will be, these types of companies will start riding that ship again and bringing that cost up. I don't know. You know, that's where, hey, I'm just a golf blog guy. Take it easy.
What do we know?
Yeah. Right. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the two brands that you mentioned, and there are many others, and we'll talk about probably a few more here, but even Tour Edge, like you mentioned, they had one of their biggest launches ever. We had Don Claffey on not too long ago on the show and talking about everything with, you know, everything that's going well with their brand. And, you know, they're certainly, you know, they have a tour presence.
Yep.
They've got a great, tour presence on the Champions Tour. And from what we understand, they're also in a number of bags at the Masters. And so, you know, they're doing a great job with not only getting the marketing out to the demographic, you know, the more affordable, high quality equipment, you know, which listeners and viewers, we should say that it's that's different than saying it's cheap, because Tour Edge is anything but that. I mean, they put a lot of tech into what they do. Chicago company, by the way, out here in Batavia. And then Sub 70 themselves, I mean, yeah, they take a completely different look at everything. They've been on the podcast a couple times. And yeah, they're a lot more affordable, direct to consumer. Probably people new to the game are gravitating to both of those companies and others, which shouldn't be surprising. And to your point about next year, do you feel that we will continue to see more new golfers, or just people have caught the bug and now we've just got a larger pool of people playing the game?
I mean, I don't think we're going to keep seeing the growth by any means. Like, frankly, I just don't, there's not enough people to grow that much that and continue it. And let's be honest, you have to survive now approximately 6 months of winter in North America, right? So, which is a huge base for golf purchasing. So, all these people who went out and bought their, you know, last year's Tour Edge Hot Launch 4 to get back into the game, are they gonna, is April gonna roll around and the Masters is on and everybody has that same bug again? Or, you know, are they gonna go, you know what, I got too much on my plate, I'm not going back to golf yet?
That was something I did during quarantine, you know.
Yeah, or it's like I just forgot how much I did enjoy it, and there's enough, you know, knock on wood here, there's enough other stuff going on, because we're trending that direction in the world, there's enough other stuff going on that it's not the one thing I'm allowed to do.
Yeah.
So I think and this is where, you know, hopefully golf, are you listening, right? That golf goes, let's not so much worry about just pressing and come up with good ways to retain the new audience we picked up this year. Like, you and I are still going to golf. They don't, golf does not have to worry about, are we going to go find our rounds at whatever course this year? Are we still going to be interested in playing at Sand Valley or Whistling Straits? Like, we still are. It's a case of, well, that guy who's like, you know what, I used to play, I've been doing this all summer, I want to go play a cool course. Is that guy going to come back and go do those things? And why? And if he isn't, why isn't he? What do you got to do for him? Yeah. And I bet you there's a lot of like wives and girlfriends. You know, like, my wife's like, something for her. You know, she's like, you know, I golf every now and then, but this year I could do it more. Like, will she be incentivized to come back? Will it sound inviting to her next year too? She doesn't care. She hates, like, she borderline hates it because I love it so much. I don't blame her. But
yeah,
how do you keep all those people coming back? And I think that's what golf needs to focus on. Because even if they can't grow, like, if I love how I call it they, like it's really someone. If golf continues to grow like it did this year, and they can retain even what a quarter of that, it's going to be better than the golf industry has been in decades.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe a decade and a half, like the Tiger Woods boom effect. That's a pretty big one.
Yeah, that was pretty big. And, you know, when we see a lot of releases that came out this year, you know, we mentioned, you know, Tour Edge, Sub 70, of course, you know, at the time of this recording, when it gets released, Srixon would have come out with their new ZX5 and ZX7 drivers along with their irons. And, you know, Callaway's got a bunch of stuff. Mizuno had a big launch this year. They've just got a lot of great stuff coming out. The price points haven't really gone down at all for some of the bigger names, yet we still saw a lot of people getting into the game. And to your point earlier, it was interesting. You know, big time golf media guys here, folks. We were talking a little bit about something nerdy like search engine optimization the other day. Mm-hmm. And do you have a guess, Bill, in 2020, what the most searched term is golf related? I just found this out this morning. I'm putting you on the spot here.
Like one word?
No, a phrase. What would you guess that is?
How to break 80, how to break 90, whatever. Or
that's actually a really good guess.
Or how to not slice the ball.
Those are good guesses. And they were up there. Equipment wise, it was used golf equipment.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. The most searched, which is interesting because now people want to get into it. And so that speaks a lot to the secondhand market as well.
No, I'm not kidding. You know, the parts of the hobby I'm into.
Oh yeah. Me too.
That plays very well for a lot of the gear I like to blog, not review, blog about. Mm-hmm. Noted. And now I'm kicking myself. I'm like, I've been doing this for 7 years. Right. I've never thought that's something I got to capture. For someone to show up to my site, I'm like, oh, it's not what I thought it was. Like, whatever. You still clicked it.
Well, right. Well, you and I go to I don't know about you, but I'm sure you do this because I've seen you've shown me some of the things that you've bought recently. I'll go to Goodwill. I'll go right to the rack of golf clubs.
Yeah.
And I'll see what they got. And even I'll buy something I absolutely don't need, but I'm going to try to break it at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and just see what I can do with it. And you were showing me that you were messing around with an old Ben Hogan set with the pins. I didn't even know they had pins.
Oh God, I can't decide if it was really the nightmare I made it or I just need to go buy some different tools. But I mean, my finger is still a disaster from it. And for those who don't know, I didn't just burn the pad of my index finger, right? The absolute tip of it. Yeah. I mean, I like branded it like a cow that I'm putting out to my pasture. Like it is just burnt.
You took a knuckle off, I think, is what the way you put it to me.
Oh, so and it hurts so bad. So inconvenient and hurts so bad.
But I mean, I think that just speaks to hobbyists like us who want to try and do that type of stuff because we just simply can't get enough golf. I mean, even viewers to this video are seeing behind you, you've got what, four golf bags full of gear. At least five bags.
I got two more. Got an empty-ish one here because long story. And I have two more outside the door.
Oh wow! Just waiting
to get in. Well, one of them is because I use it. Actually, one of them's my minimal bag. Shout out Adam Unfiltered for turning me on to those guys. Yeah, and then the other one is maybe I think we'll get to them is my bag of Tour Edge Hot Launch 521 gear. From the big match with Chris McEwen I had last week. So that, you know, I don't have room for that. It's newly brought on gear. Where am I supposed to put it?
Yeah. I got no dukes. What am I supposed to do with it? Right. So you do love yourself some Tour Edge. This wasn't about to be a conversation about Tour Edge, but let's go down that path. Cause we've mentioned him a few times. What do you like so much about him?
I try to be pretty open about it that I am a recent convert. I mean, they've always been on my radar. They were literally born at the golf course I grew up playing, Village Links of Glen Ellen, where we played. And So my whole life, they've always been in the pro shop. They've always been what all the guys there were playing, etc. And I never put in my bag for one reason or another. Then, of course, I hit that like, Tour Edge Bazooka. Who do you think I am? I'm a big time golf guy. I don't play that garbage. And, you know, I went through that whole phase of life. And then I hit that later where it's like, no, I understood. People are really into the, well, frankly, even in the, especially like in the early to mid 2000s, right? Guys were winning on the big tour with it. Mm-hmm. Brant Snedeker had it in the bag when he came out. It was highly regarded. Their fairway woods and hybrids were heavily regarded as some of the best in the game up there with, you know, all the Adams stuff at the time. And I'm like, all right, but you know, I'm a hot shot. I have the coolest new Callaway Cobra, whatever. I'm also, you got to go back to like when, before Cobra got bought by Puma and they were like the redheaded stepchild of Titleist at right. a Kushnet.
Yep.
I'm like, no, I'm different. I'm, you know, I'm a snowflake. I'm playing Cobra fairway woods. Fast forward. Baffler. post Baffler. You know, okay. You had like the
LTD.
For sure. 3 and 5 when they were all I would still play those. They're awesome. But it really wasn't until Dry Range Heroes came around that I reached out and I said, hey, I live down the street. I'm doing this. I have experience. I'd like to get Tour Edge stuff going. And I got trying to think what so the first things I got through here were the EXS line, the original one, and then the CBX 119 stuff. And I was like, geez, this stuff's like, frankly, it's amazing. Especially the hybrids and fairway woods. So that's like going in my bag and really is a big eye opener. And here, I'm going to be this guy if it's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Over the years of doing this, I am fortunate. I get to hit a lot of different golf clubs. I get to play at a lot of different golf clubs. And there's an easy argument. And as Chris says, I could have anything I want in my golf bag for the most part. I mean, yeah. National Custom Works isn't sending me $4,500 irons for free or anything, but I'm just saying, I know of the stuff, it's there. I could go get it, buy it, do it with the website, whatever. But I started putting this Tour Edge stuff head to head with the stuff I was previously playing, and it was just blowing it out of the water.
Yeah.
And then, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's easy, you get it for free. Well, of course you say it. I'm like, well, no.
That's not how it works.
Some, you know, they might go, here, I can give you a 3-wood. And I go, wow, this 3-wood's great. I'm going to buy a 5-wood from you. Or like, hey, I've really enjoyed this hybrid. I want to buy another one. Or I beat the living daylights out of it. I want a new one. Let me buy it. You know, so it's just that good. And obviously, if you're buying it, it's affordable compared to the rest of the market. But I think it's one of those things where it just doesn't get the attention it deserves. And it legitimately is that good. I've had, let me see. Well, I think of the EXS 220 fairway wood this year, sure. Which was on my list of like, it's probably my favorite club to come out of this year. I told Chris he was an idiot if he didn't put it in his bag and replace his 3-wood. And he's like, okay, all right, whatever. And he's like, he saw me play with it once. He's like, God, that thing sounds amazing, but whatever. Then he gets it to review for Chris McEwen's projects.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my God, this thing's amazing. And then you're going, all right. You two both think this thing's good. What Kool-Aid are you drinking here? And then it comes through the Golf Unfiltered headquarters and works through that organization, hockey player. Yeah. And all of you guys are like, oh my God, this thing's amazing. And that happens all the time with them. If you give it a chance, you're like, geez, this stuff's a real deal. And it's only, as the company's been growing in these last 5 years, like it's only getting better. I remember Hot Launch 3, right?
Yeah.
It was fine. It was very good for the money. But this new Hot Launch 521 stuff, I don't know if John said this on your show or talked about it much when he was just on, but he was telling Chris and myself that it is very much closing the gap between their premium stuff and their quote value clubs. And Chris and I just brought all of it out. And he's not lying. It's incredible gear. And then when you start looking at it's $89 for a single iron with a Fubuki graphite shaft in it, it's incredible value.
It really is. I mean, you're essentially paying for like 80% of that is the shaft.
Right. That's what I said, but either like, yeah, but we're really, it's all, he's like, we're like shooting ourselves in the foot with it to an extent, because it is that good and we could charge more, but we don't, because we want to get the right gear in people's hands. We want to sell this gear and get our name out there. Like, look, we don't want to be in Rory's hands or Dustin's hands coming down, you know, the fairway on the 18th hole winning some tournament. I mean, don't get me wrong, they wouldn't turn that away. Sure. But they are catering with this gear to the people who started golfing this year, who aren't any good, but go, well, I'm allowed to golf. I mean, the stuff this 521 stuff that was like comes out in my reviews, it's a cheat code. It's incredible how easy it makes the game, even if you're bad. So I think they get that, and they've really figured out how to dial in the quality. And I mean, let's face it, a lot of other brands out there have made that like mid-range, you just want to get into the game, but you don't want to spend $500 on a driver, $1,000 on a set of irons, right? But it looks like it, it feels like it, and it's definitely cheap. Tour Edge is now getting to a point where they're offering that same price point in that same like category, but it's really good.
Yeah, well, a lot of new golfers have that sticker shock right out of the gate. I know I've got a few people that I work with at my day job, and their husbands were actually getting into the game for the first mm-hmm. time. They had never played before, and they're like, where can I go buy used golf clubs? And I'm like, well, consider brands like this. You can probably get a brand new set and, you know, probably similar price to a really good set of used clubs. Why not buy new? Look at Tour Edge. Look at a few other places.
And they're probably better fit for your game than like, well, this is a good deal on some used insert brand name iron or bigger brand name iron here that you like just because, oh, I know Titleist. They're supposed to make great stuff. It's like, yeah, but you're terrible. Why are you playing a muscle bag? Like, why are you buying a muscle bag? Or you could go buy this game improvement set from Tour Edge. It's designed for you for significantly less. How often do you get? I get this a lot because I'm sure, like me, you're the golf guy. You have all the golf answers for anybody.
All the time.
Right. So, hey, you know, I want to get new clubs, and you know, I know you can buy, you know, hashtag used clubs for cheaper. I want $1,000. $1,000 to get a full bag, wedges, putter, everything, and you can't do it anymore.
No,
even on the used market. I mean, I have a set of, you know, I was doing the big gear purge. I have a set of Callaway, 2018 Callaway Apex muscle back heads. Right, mm-hmm. I could sell just those heads somewhere around like $500.
Oh, easily,
and that's insane.
Yeah,
it's a golf club. And I mean, I'll take it. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, when you think of that, like that just tells you how expensive this stuff is. And it's sort of like it's a for what? Whereas yeah. I've used them, I've bent them, done whatever. Right. Tour Edge can go be like, well, here's a nice new set of irons. It's super forgiving, very long and just easy to hit, offset. So you don't slice the ball. $500 brand new.
Yeah.
Or you can have my shitty old bent butter knife heads that you can't hit. Like it's just not worth it. So if you can go, a lot of these brands right now, they're making great stuff at great deals, and you can go spend $800 and get a full set.
Yeah.
Even Tour Edge's box sets are better than, and they're very affordable. And it's like they're still better than the Walter Hagen crap you're buying at Dick's, or I don't even know who the box sets are anymore.
I think you could still get them at Walmart. I don't know. I mean, I think Golf Galaxy, if there's one in your town, mm-hmm. I don't even know if they're a thing anymore. I think they have a few. But, you know, it's interesting what you said about, you know, yeah, by the way, I am that person that people turn to. If it's not a question about who do you like in the U.S. Open this week, it's usually.
Yeah,
you know, I'm a much better gambler than I am a golf blogger. Let me just tell you that.
right.
But it's usually exactly what you just said. How do I get the most for my money? And my usual response to a question of, well, I got $1,000. What do I spend it on? Is, well, do you want something within the last 5 years? Because if the answer is yes, then sorry, you got to pump that up a little bit for a full bag. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, and then you run into like, do you need that? Right. And it's. Right. As I learned this past weekend, you don't need it. You don't need something from the last 5 years. It was new gear, but I'm saying like these, all the fancy new innovations, like when you start getting down to the basics, you're not looking for fancy innovations. You're really looking for kind of tried and true designs done well and affordably.
And that's usually the name of the game, right? That's what you want. You want to go out there and enjoy the game. And of all the clubs that we take a look at, and I know that we could probably talk about a number of them that we looked at this year. You had mentioned the EXS 220 was something that really stood out to you. Anything else that stood out?
So that was a big one. One of them, and I said year of the value club. And I, again, like you said, doesn't mean cheap. Sub 70 irons have really caught my eye. And I don't think that's necessarily a really unique and novel take. A lot of people would agree with that same statement, but I mean, they're forged. They're not going to tell you that anything different. They're forged over in China with, you know, they help design them too. It's not like they're not involved in it, but by doing it straight to consumer, you're getting these good forged irons for, frankly, dirt cheap. The prices are stupid low for these clubs. You're talking like a full forged set of irons for less than $500. Cavity backs. I mean, you have players' irons, you have game improvement irons, you really have the full thing. And I would tell you, it's one of those things like I knew about them last year, but this year is the first year I had like the full exposure to them. And I mean, it's wild how inexpensive they are for how good they are.
And you I like them. I had a chance to go out to Sycamore, like you mentioned, and I went to HQ. Jason out there does a good job. It's Jay and Jason, right? If I remember you guys, right? You know, and I often wonder about brands like them because they're not the only direct-to-consumer brand, but you even mentioned them yourself. I mean, clubs made over in China, they come over. I mean, do golfers really care where they come from? Because, I mean, you and I both know that something like near net forgings, for example, that's something that happens all the time. And it's not a bad thing. I think people hear that phrase sometimes and they think of it as like a criticism, but that's just simply not the case.
Here, I'll put it to you this way. My favorite thread I jump into on Golf WRX all the time, or threads, I should say, are when people start complaining about who's making whose putter heads.
Right.
And they'll be like, this is clearly someone else forging this head and I'm not going to buy it. And then they're like, Byron Morgan, I'm going to buy him because he makes his own putter heads. And someone's like, forgings, milled, whatever. Right. And they're like, actually Byron only mills some of his heads. Like, people don't understand the way the putter business has worked forever. Unless your name's Bob Bettinardi, right? Because little small fact there, Bettinardi putters isn't his like meal ticket.
You were telling me that the other day.
Yeah. He's heavily involved in other parts of American milling, which is, and it's great. It's good stuff. He is by far one of the best millers in the golf world. Not taking that away from him. I'm not a big Bettinardi guy, but like it's just the truth. But most of these guys, Scotty Cameron, he's not milling his own heads. Most of these guys like come up with their CAD designs or whatever, and then have somebody else do the milling for them. Then you start seeing these WX guys like, he doesn't mill his own heads. I'm not going to buy him. It's like, well, Scotty hasn't. And you're telling me how good a Circle T from 2010. Like, you know, I think that's the big thing. So if you start getting into, well, they had some place forge these irons for them in China, it's not really their own like forging house. I got news for you. None of them are. You know, Endo Forgings does like five different companies.
Right.
So hey, I think that's where it's really, you're getting over like marketing stigmas or whatever, right? That you don't know the name Sub 70 reflexively. You know the name Ping. You know the name Titleist. And I mean, you start running into, well, Scotty Cameron does this, right? He puts out a bunch of like just junk, but it's Scotty Cameron. It's worth $400, $500. It's Scotty Cameron. He knows what he's doing. So I think like, I almost, without realizing, take it upon myself, and I think it is with Tour Edge Sub 70, you know, these guys I've really like grown to like the gear of, never mind the people, which I do like, is going, you got to get over the marketing stuff, the big names, the brand names. They, don't get me wrong, they all make good gear too, but that doesn't mean, because this guy is having someone forge it for him in China and says, I am not forging this in Sycamore or with a like Sub 70 specific, which has, you know, forging house in China, like, doesn't mean it's bad stuff.
Right. Exactly.
Sub 70 is a good example, 'cause I know a little bit about it. Like, they are involved in the design process and the final product and prototype testing, like, they, which a lot of these, for lack of a better term, template companies aren't. They're just buying a manufactured head by somebody else, pressing their name on it.
Right.
They aren't even involved in design and looks whatsoever, where Sub 70 is. And then they have a dedicated company over there who does it. So it's not just like it's contracted to five different places to do it. They contract this place to make this club, and then they work with engineers there to do it.
Yeah.
I think that's like, that's no different. It's no different than the bigger companies. They do the exact same thing.
So why do you think, and I know we're kind of going down a rabbit hole here, and everything you've just said, totally agree with, you know, you and I have talked about it, you know, ad nauseum, but why do you think those threads at, you know, the big time golf websites, you know, like WRX, whatever, they have an issue with it? Is it because it's just a matter of, you know, we've kind of transitioned from the new players getting into the game for the first time. They just want a new set of clubs. And now we're talking about nerds like you and me, yeah, who go down like four different rings of hell into the golf nerddom. And then all of a sudden we get this uppity, snobby element of, oh no, I need something that's been milled in the USA, which I'm a, you know, let's just say it. I mean, I'm a big Bettinardi guy. I love them. But, and I understand that there are some that don't mm-hmm. like that, but I think there's from different reasons as well. But why do you think there's that mentality that, you know, I need something this way? And it only really exists, at least in my purview, in golf. I'm sure there are probably other industries.
I feel like you're right. I think this is more of a big, like political economic thing in the yeah. world in general, but it will keep it specific to golf. And I think it's tough because there are guys who do milling in the US who are just the product is better because of it. And I think Bettinardi is a good example. Bettinardi is awesome at milling a putter. It's going to be better. So yeah, if everybody milled their putters in the US and did it the way he did it, man, would it be better and worth buying, but they don't. So, and that's fine. But just because let's take like forging an iron, for example. If you were only forging, which there's like climate issues related to why we don't do it in the US anymore. But if you're right. only, if you use that methodology or that mindset for forging an iron, you couldn't buy any irons. And you're going to tell me then all these irons being these Mizuno irons that are forged in like Taiwan now, they're not all in Japan, right? Or you're going to tell me, well, Muir irons must not be good. They're not forged in the US. They're forged in Japan. Like, as much as the people love to get on that high horse about it has to be milled in the US, you think if you thought like this, it's going to cut out so much of the good golf industry to you. And it comes down to, I think, and the forum specifically, because I don't think every golfer is like this by any means, but the guys starting these threads and going into these dork rabbit holes that you and I go into, it's really, I feel like it's just to be heard. And just to like, they just want to live in this fantasy land that everybody's Bob Bettinardi, and God bless them. Not everybody is Bob Bettinardi. They're not.
Yeah.
And not everybody has like a second half of their milling business to float. I think Tyson Lamb's one that's been coming up a lot lately. He's milling out ball markers and repair tools and having someone make him a head cover. He's not even cranking out the putters that much, but.
Well, like Swag too. I mean, if I remember right, they were they an ex-employee of Bettinardi?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I think they make like three putters a year and they supplement everything with head covers.
Yeah. And the model works, but it's like, you can't tell me. I mean, I have some putters that have been milled in England. I have putters that have been milled for companies in England, but made in China or somewhere else, and they're fantastic. Like Vega's another company that they're not as big as they used to be, but they make incredible stuff. And it might be forged in China, milled in China, whatever they're doing. It's not a bad club. Like, it's good, except that it's a good club. And I get, if you want to, like, look, if you're one of those people that's like, I support Made in America anywhere I can, for sure, do it. But sure. I think going down these rabbit holes of like, oh, I'm not buying this boutique putter maker because he doesn't mill his own heads. Like, fine. Guess what? 95% of the people who are going to buy from that guy are still going to buy from that guy. God, this was it. That is it. This is like a deep golf dork rabbit hole.
So let me pull us out of it a little. And I know that we're like up against the clock here too. And once again, folks, we're talking to Mr. Bill Bush. He is one of the brains behind Driving Range Heroes. What else you got going on coming up? I know we didn't really talk too much about the favorites of 2020, but what do you got going on at DRH these days?
It's that time of year. It's interesting because everybody's starting to talk about the new gear for next year, but it's not, the pipeline is not necessarily flowing yet. So we don't have a ton of reviews lined up, but Chris and I have some That Range Life production stuff in mind that we're going to work on. We do have a good review coming in 2 weeks, and I was going to talk about it here, but we didn't get to it. Was the new Project X Hazardous Smoke RDX shaft line.
Ooh.
People go crazy for Project X stuff, and especially Hazardous. And I'll tell you what, you can go find a lot of stuff on the Smoke Black RDX. The blue one, you're not seeing as much. I'm going to leave it at that because I want the searches. But I have the review going up for that. And I don't know when you're releasing this, but Monday the 14th, I'll just say that.
Okay.
And that thing is pretty neat, especially for like the big, you know, I need low launch, low spin, stout shaft bomber guys out there these days. Like, this is a good one. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Just finding a way to keep things running until the spring when golf peps up again. Maybe do some virtual PGA show watching in between there.
Yeah, I think that's on deck for us too. I still have to decide whether or not I want to do that. Maybe we'll do some things those evenings. Kind of have like our own little virtual review, the virtual pit or whatever. Have a few drinks and whatnot, and we'll do this again soon. So, all right. Once again, that's Mr. Bill Bush. He's of DrivingRangeHeroes.com. Bill, thanks so much for coming on. I'm sure you'll be seeing more of these two faces on YouTube in the future, as well as hearing our voices once again. So thanks again, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.